This is Henry McCarthy coming to you from the beautiful Emory and Henry College campus, WEHC 90.7, Poets and Writers, and we're very pleased today to have on our show Steve Lindahl. And Steve is from, well, he now lives in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and he has an interesting take on how he writes mysteries and the plot. You're going to find very interesting. So we're down in Winston-Salem again today, and a lot of big things going on here this week. So, Steve, welcome to Poets and Writers.
Hi, Henry. Nice to be here.
Now, I want to be sure it's Steve Lindahl, correct?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
All right. And as we like to ask, in these parts of the country here in Southwest Virginia, where are you from?
Well, I grew up in East Orange, New Jersey, and came down here for a job in the mid-70s. And both my children were born down here. We actually live in the town of McLeansville, which is a little to the east of Greensboro. It's between Greensboro and Burlington. I work over here in Winston-Salem. And I've been attending writers groups for 30-plus years over here in Winston-Salem. So I've got my writing connection is the roots are in Winston-Salem.
Right, but you have an interesting background, and we're going to talk about that a little later, because you are in business, and but you have a drama background as well.
Right, yeah. My degrees were both in theater arts, so and I did an apprenticeship for a Shakespeare festival. There's a connection between theater and writing novels, I think, specifically with the characters. If you don't have a good feel for your characters, you're not going to write a good novel, because there has to be good reactions, there has to be things that people understand and people can relate to in your writing, and that all comes through characterization. Well, there's no better background to have for characterization than theater. We would spend hours going out and observing people and then trying to do little skits that recreated those people and develop things in that way. So there's definitely a connection, and it's worked, and I think it has been, it was an excellent degree for me when it comes to my writing.
So you, and I always like to ask to back up just for a moment, do you remember the first thing you ever wrote? Or the second thing you ever wrote?
Probably not the first, I'm not sure, but back in eighth grade, this is what got me interested in writing. I had a friend, Jim Washington, I still remember his name, and he and I were writing a project together. And I believe it was a short story, although it might have been a play. I can't remember the specifics about it enough. But what I do remember most was Jim was an excellent writer. He had a very good sense, for an eighth grade student this is, of course, he had a very good sense of how people talked, how people felt and spoke. And I didn't at the time. And I got very jealous, and I decided, this is something I want to learn to do. And so that was when my writing career really began, and I began to experiment and learn and develop over many, many years.
So when you were in college, you were a drama major, is that correct?
Correct, yes.
And talk a little bit more. You know, this is the home, Abingdon, Virginia, and this region is the home of Barter Theater.
Yes.
And Gregory Peck and many of the great actors came out of there, did summer work there. So talk a little bit about this idea. I was just talking to a young lady who has a very popular book out right now, and she has a drama background. Talk a little more about how that's affected your writing and so on.
Well, you get to know people, I think, better. People in fictional settings, that's probably the best way to say it. Because when you develop a fictional setting, there's going to be major reactions that are easily translated into writing of a novel. In a play, a murder occurs, or there's some sort of a love triangle. There always has to be a device that makes the play interesting. And so when you are an actor, you get to walk on stage, you get to become that character, you get to learn exactly how you would respond to some of these things that you don't see in day-to-day life, but make a book or a play fascinating. And I think that aspect, plus the exercises of just going out on the street and seeing how a child reacts, then going back and trying to play a child or trying to play an elderly person, something that you wouldn't get cast in. So some of your exercises are outstanding too. And they all translate into writing novels, because novels are characters. No matter whether it's a mystery or a science fiction or historical novel, you have to have good characters and you have to have good reactions, or people aren't going to be interested. They aren't going to turn the pages.
Excellent. Now, you have an interesting background, because when you left the drama world, you went into, I know that you were with Haynes and in the business world. Talk a little bit about that.
Right. I took a kind of a backdoor road into computer programming without giving up my love for writing and my love for the theater, too. But I had to make a living, and that was the easiest way I could do it. And the backdoor route went basically this way. I did a master's in theater, and I had set design classes in that. And that drove me into drafting. And drafting was a position that I could get and make enough to support my wife and my newborn child, which soon became two children. And from drafting, I went into CAD, which is computer-aided drafting. And from that, I went into programming. And that's where I ended up finding a niche. There are a lot of skills that a novelist uses that are similar to what a programmer uses. Basic skills like attention to detail and looking at the big picture but still understanding the little steps. I've heard novels described, the process of writing a novel described as driving through a snowstorm. And I think that's true of programs, too, because you can kind of see a little bit of the road that's in front of you, and you know where you're going, but you got to concentrate on what's right in front of you in order to get there. That's balance. That's in both places.
We're listening on Poets and Writers this morning, WEHC 90.7. We're listening to Steve Lindahl talk about his writing, and he has a couple of very interesting books out. Steve, before we get to your books, and we're in Winston-Salem today, could you talk a little bit about that writers group that you were a member of 30-some years ago? And
it was my first writers group. Thank you for bringing it up. The interesting thing is we are doing this interview at the library where we had the very first group I was a member of. And it was we met monthly, and we met in this same room and sat at this same table, which says something probably about library budgets, because this table's more than 35 years old. So we had our meeting here, and what we would do is if somebody wanted their story or their poetry critiqued, they would bring them in and they would hand them out on paper. Nobody had computers at that point in time. And each person would take it home, critique it, and the next month we would discuss it, so you'd have time at home to go over stuff. And I got my start there. Some of my first stories were critiqued in this group.
Who were some of the members of that group 30-some years ago?
We had, the most famous member is Sharon McCrum, who was starting her writing career at this group. And we used to get together and go to a restaurant afterwards called the Rose and Thistle, and where we would meet and we'd talk about the meeting we just had and discuss how things were going and how we dreamed about where our writing was going to go. And she's done extremely well with her writing, of course.
So Sharon was a member. This is where she started. And
I believe this was her very first group, too. You'd have to ask her if she was a member of another
one
before.
We'll do it.
But she was definitely a member of our group, and that was a lot of fun. And I remember her first novel, I can't remember the name right now, but it was a series of letters, and we did critique that. It was a series of letters and a mystery built around a series of letters, which is a epistol, I think, is the name of that style of writing. She was excited about it.
Well, Steve, now, how do you critique in a writer's group? You know, we are warned sometimes by Steve, Stephen King about beware of writers' groups, and Charles Bukowski said, you know, he'd have nothing to do with the writers' group, and then other people really believe in him. So what do you have to remember in being a writers' group?
Yeah, it's a funny thing, because I think you have to be aware. You sometimes get critiques that are more about where the critiquer wants to go than they are about your work. Sometimes somebody might think they're very good at this and think, oh, my stories are great because I do this, and might try to push you in that particular direction, whereas that's not where you want to go. And so you have to be careful, you have to be objective about it. But if you find the right people, and those people are good readers as well, I mean, there can be somebody who's an excellent writer and a horrible critiquer, and vice versa. But if you find the right people and they click in a group, then you can advance a lot. So I swear by them. You know, there are things that you miss when you're a writer, no matter whether you're Stephen King or Stephen Lindahl. You are going to write something and get so close to it that you can't be objective at times. And sometimes you can set it back in a drawer and bring it out later, but sometimes you need other people to kind of respond to it. And some of that's a theater arts background too, because theater is an art form that has multiple contributors, and novels are less so. At least we think of them as less so. But I have an editor through All Things That Matter Press who's an excellent editor, Deb Harris, and so my books would not be as strong as they are now if Deb Harris hadn't done an excellent job of editing. So it becomes not as much as theater, where you have stage designers and actors and directors and lighting designers and everybody bringing things into this final product, but you still have multiple people bringing things in, and some of those people are the members of the writers group that you're a member
of. Well, Stephen, that's interesting, and you know, in the theater, don't you find when you get feedback there, it's quite to the point, and there's not a whole lot of mincing of words, so to speak. Have you not found that to be true?
Well, it depends. Yeah. It depends on who you are. I mean, if you're in a play that has a well-known name actor in there, and that person does something foolish, then they're going to mince words a little bit there. But if you're the average person, if you're in the chorus or the background, they're going to say, you know, do it that way or get off the stage.
Exactly, exactly. We're talking with Stephen Lindahl today on Poets and Writers. Now let's talk about your books. Tell us the titles there, and let's go into your books now. It's fascinating. I find the content is fascinating, and so you just go for it there.
Okay. I've got two books out now, and what I'm writing is a series of what I call past life mysteries. And what happens is a crime occurs, and the normal methods of solving the crime aren't working. So a hypnotist is brought in, and that hypnotist regresses people into past lives and uses events of their past lives to work on the crime that occurred in the present. It's based on a theory that people have multiple lives, and that people go through these multiple lives with the same souls. So that if you have your mother might be your friend in another life, your brother might be somebody who was a business acquaintance in another life. So the roles are changed slightly, but the same collection of souls move forward. So when you have an event such as White Horse Regressions, which is built around a murder, they can go back to Victorian London and the Han Dynasty and find the same souls doing similar things, but from different areas. And so part of what's interesting about my mysteries is there's not only this basic mystery that's going on, who done it, so to speak, part of that's going on, but also as you go back into the past lives, you try to say, oh, look at this character here. What character shared a soul with that person there? And what character shared a soul with that? And so part of the mystery is to try to figure out the relationships and how they've changed and how they've stayed the same in the multiple lives. And that's White Horse Regressions. It's based on, in fact, we were talking a lot about theater arts. Mm-hmm. White Horse Regressions is based on the murder of an actress. And it takes place in present times in a community theater. It goes back to Victorian London, where mm-hmm. it takes place in the background of a circus that's going on there. So there's also a performance there. And in the Han Dynasty, there's a puppet theater. And so it gets into the actual technique of performing of these shadow puppets that were popular many years ago in China.
Well, talk a little bit about your main characters.
My main character in White Horse Regression is Hannah, and she had a relationship with a woman who was an actress named Paige, and Paige was murdered. So Hannah is the one who calls Glenn Wiley in to help solve that murder. Glenn Wiley is the only character that's in both books. So he's the hypnotist, and so he goes from one novel to the next novel, and he'll be in my third novel too, which I'm working on now. Hannah calls him in and asks for his help. So he explains his theories, and he regresses her and sends her back to Victorian London, where she discovers she was a prostitute in Victorian London. And she was during the time of Jack the Ripper, where similar murders were occurring. And so she knew some of the victims at that time. So they are working on trying to solve the crimes that occurred back there, while they're working on trying to solve the crimes up here, and using events from the past to help in the solving of the modern one.
Very interesting. And then the other book, this I think was your first book.
The first one's called Motherless Soul, and that comes about the same situation in a different manner. In this book, there's an elderly woman who lost her mother when she was 2 years old. So she never knew her mother, and she decides in her late 80s that she is going to, she wants to know her mother. So she contacts the hypnotist in order to regain the memories from those first 2 years of her life so that she can see her mother and she can know her mother. But in the process of doing that, she discovers she's had these multiple lives and she's lost her mother in every single occurrence. So they have to work together to not only solve what has happened, but also to figure out who's going to be her mother in the next life, so they can break the cycle and prevent this from happening over and over again.
That is so interesting. The concept and the plot is fascinating. Could you share a little bit, read a little bit for us today from either one of your books, whatever you choose to read from? We would, I know our radio audience would love to hear from you. And this is Henry McCarthy, WEHC Poets and Writers, out of the beautiful Emory and Henry College campus. Mm-hmm. Go for it there, Steve.
Okay. Okay, I think I'll read from the first book first. This is, Emily has had one regression prior to this, but she's gone back to an early part of her life. This is the first regression she has where she actually goes back into a past life. Glenn asked her to count backwards from 100. When she passed 59, he started to guide her, saying, "Go back, back further, to a time before you were Emily Vincent. Keep going back." His words seemed to run right through her body, like a shot of whiskey. Glenn seemed to be growing distant. Although she knew he was right next to her, she kept counting towards zero, even as he spoke. Emily lost track of the counting. She was certain she'd repeated some numbers, but she tried to keep them coming. She knew she had to do what Glenn told her to do. She closed her eyes. Shortly after that, the dim light she could make out through her lids faded into absolute darkness.
You're slipping through time and space into a place that's been buried in your heart for ages upon ages. Something important happened to you in this place. You're starting to remember what it was like, the smells, the sounds, the texture of the world around you. Her eyes started to burn. Memories were flowing into her head after a period of nothingness, and those sensations were different from what she'd experienced the day before. This time it was as if she were two people. The person she had been before the session began, the old woman nearing the end of her life, was now watching someone else from inside that other person's body. The other person was very young, but in trouble. "Talk to me, Emily. Let me know what you're feeling." Emily started to cry. She wasn't able to hold back. Her cry was the loud wail of a hungry baby. But Emily knew what she felt wasn't only hunger. Something was very wrong. "I can smell smoke and feel heat," she told Glenn. She was in a trance, but able to speak. "Images are coming into my head. I see my mother sitting beside me. She's reaching over to pick me up. I'm an infant, too young to say words or understand what's happening around me. There is so much noise, groans from men lying on the ground near us, and shouts from other men behind the bushes and trees. There are blasts of gunfire, and the sounds of branches breaking and feet pounding as men run in every direction imaginable." So she has gone back in time into a Civil War battle. And she, reason, there is this young baby in a Civil War situation.
Can you tell us a little bit how you happened to, have you been hypnotized? How did you happen to come to write about this?
Well, for me, it's kind of a backdoor thing, just like I was talking about with programming. I really needed a device to work on my historical fiction, because I wanted fiction that worked like time travel fiction works, where you can have a present day occurrence and then you go back and you see what happened in the time and you incorporate them together into one novel. But there's problems with time travel books, and this was kind of a unique approach where you could use past lives and have a historical novel built into a modern novel.
Well, now,
so I decided to use that.
Have you been hypnotized?
Yes,
I have. You know, because some of us, I've always been afraid that I would be stuck there, you know, and something would happen to the hypnotist. Anyway, so talk a little bit about that.
Because I was interested in writing books that I needed to research what happens when you do go back into a past life. And so I had an experience in group situations with a woman who's local here in Winston-Salem named Sandra Focus, who does group regressions. And so I went to her session, and she talked us through imagining ourselves in a garden and then walking down some steps and eventually walking through a mirror into another life. And if you release your inhibitions and you listen to her discuss this, you can kind of feel as you're going back into that other life. And that seemed to work for me. I wasn't 100% sure, but I felt like I was back there. I could look down, see my feet were wrapped in something that looked like very old style medieval wrap shoes made out of deer hide or something. And I could see what was around me, and I could see near me a blonde-haired young woman. But that was about as far as I got in that session. But it was fascinating. And then you're wondering, well, did I actually step into a past life? Or did I just imagine this because, you know, there is something else that I've brought in from my experiences into this and put it into that thought? But past lives, Buddhists and Hindus accept the idea of reincarnation. So there are millions and millions of people in this world that accept this as a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And it was once part of the Christian church philosophy, too, years and years ago in medieval time. Nowadays, in modern Christianity, people accept the second coming of Christ, but I haven't heard too many.
So you would come back as someone else. right? How about, would you come back as an animal, perhaps?
You can, all and right. I've had situations like that where some of the minor characters actually experience things as past lives as an animal. But you could, you definitely could.
All right, let's share with our readers again the titles of your books are. Share White. That, and then talk a little bit about where they can have access to them, and then your advice to people get, do you have a long history of writing, your advice to getting started in writing.
Well, the first book was called Motherless Soul, and it's available on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble's. It's available in print form or Kindle or Nook, and the same is true of White Horse Regressions, and that's Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or also both of these books are available through my publisher, which is All Things That Matter Press, allthingsthatmatterpress.com. My name is Steve Lindahl, which is L-I-N-D-A-H-L, and I have a website, stevelindahl.com, so you can also find the books and information about the books there if you're interested. For getting started, the main thing is just write, and then find people to share it with. That's what I would suggest. Sometimes that's family members, sometimes that's friends, sometimes that's attending a workshop, sometimes that's joining a writer's group, but you should find somebody to share it with. So if you don't share your work, it's hard to know what are the good aspects and what are the bad aspects. It's hard to know what's going to catch on and what isn't going to catch on. And so I think it's extremely important to involve other people in the process.
So it's that human interaction and the sharing of energy, correct?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so, especially if it's other writers, because mm-hmm. then there's a social aspect to it, too. You get to know people, and they're fun people. I mean, writers are among the most interesting people you can find, I say, as a writer, I guess. But they have these fictional lives that they're developing, and a good writer cares as much about his characters as he does about other people around him.
Well, now, do you have a certain schedule you write on? You get up every morning at 5 o'clock and you write for 2 hours, or how does that work?
Well, I've got a very odd schedule, probably different than most writers. I go to bed around 8:30. And then I get up at around 11 o'clock or so, and I stay up for a couple hours, and that's when I do my writing. And then I go back to bed a second time. So I've got a very odd schedule, but it's worked out for me. Each person has to find how they're going to find time. I think it was Philip Roth was saying, you know, too many writers worry about finding the inspiration. Well, if that inspiration comes and you're not sitting at your computer or you're not there with a pad of paper and a pen, you're not going to write anything down from that inspiration.
So you might write it on a napkin and later.
But the main idea is you got to dedicate the time to writing.
Exactly. I want to thank you for being on the show today on Poets and Writers, WEHC 90.7, coming to you from the beautiful Emory and Henry College campus. You've been listening to Steve Lindahl today talk about his two books, White Horse Regressions and
Motherless Soul.
So thank you so much. It's been so interesting to have you on the program. And Richard Graves, thank you for all your help in producing this show. And this is Henry McCarthy saying, I'm going out to write a poem. Do not wait up for me. I'm going out to write a poem and watch the children play. So thank you, dear listeners out there. And you will be listening to us next time. Thanks again, Steve.
Thank you.